Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm Shane Bacon. It's been a busy, busy few days in the golf world, and sadly, not going to be a lot of chatter about the Charlie Hoffman win in San Antonio. I have been kind of traveling across the country for some other golf events. I was at the Golf Digest Think Young, Play Hard Invitational out in Las Vegas. Somehow won the event. My partner, Josh Sullivan of GoPro, great guy, fellow lefty. Lefties conquered that event, but he carried my back for a couple days. He's probably still a little bit of sore, but a really fun event. If you've never checked that out, make sure you go to Golf Digest, look it up. They have it every year. This is the second one they've had. It's in Las Vegas. A lot of fun, a lot of cool little things they do. Also, I was at a little place called Oakmont Country Club earlier in the week, getting a chance to play it as we get prepared and get set for the U.S. Open Championship there. Ninth time it's going to be hosted at Oakmont. Obviously, that's the most ever. Wasn't totally sure what to expect, and let me just tell you, after 18 holes around that golf course, you totally understand why the U.S. Open continues to go back, the USGA continues to go back. It is one of the most amazing golf courses I've ever seen, I've ever played. It's one of the most interesting golf courses I've ever played, but we're not going to get to that just yet. I've got a few more things we're going to knock out, then I'm going to get to some of your questions about the Oakmont experience, because really, it was really so different, and I'm not sure I've ever had a five-hour golfing experience that was like that. But a couple things. First, I wanted to apologize to Chris Solomon of No Laying Up. We had a Masters bet where the loser had to get a Burger King hot dog and eat it. I've yet to do that, and I know fast money makes fast friends, so I apologize. I'm assuming fast hot dogs give you fast indigestion. I'm going to do it today, I promise. So once the podcast wraps, I'm going to go to Burger King and get a hot dog for lunch. I am excited about it, as you can hear in my voice. It's going to be delicious. I cannot wait. And Burger King, if you feel like sponsoring the podcast, just let us know. You can email us at theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com, and we will proudly promote the hot dogs for months, as long as you have them. And if McDonald's wants to do it, we'll do the McRib. It's fine. Anybody that wants to sponsor it, especially if it includes food, we're in. Of course, you can get in touch with us at Shane Bacon at the Clubhouse Pod. #ClubhouseSB if you have any questions. As I said, we'll get to some mailbag questions a bit later. The guest today, you've seen her. You know who she is. Paige Sporenik is going to be on the pod. She obviously a lot of interest in her, just kind of her journey around golf. I'm more interested in her as a golfer. I've had a chance to play some golf with her. She's an interesting, journey, in my opinion. I just think the way she's gone about it has been different. For some reason, it's been controversial. I'm not totally sure why. People get upset when anybody has some sort of success, even if maybe people don't think it's the way that they should go. I always laugh at that. You know, I mean, it's a little bit like, somebody becoming a blogger and not going to the newspaper route and people getting upset about it. I mean, you know, you take advantages when they come, especially when you're trying to be a pro golfer. But we'll get to that. First, I wanted to talk about Oakmont. I just think, as I said, the experience was so fun and so cool that I wanted to dedicate the intro to just some questions you guys had about it, some points I had about it. Obviously, not only a top 10 golf course in the world, but a golf course that, in my opinion, really resembles exactly what you think and represents exactly what you'd expect when you look at a major championship. Majors are supposed to be tough. They're supposed to be brutal. They're supposed to be hard. I wrote a piece immediately following my round that we'll put up on foxsports.com during U.S. Open week. You know, we're less than 2 months away from the U.S. Open. It's crazy. And players are prepared. I was a bit surprised. A couple of the caddies told me that Rory hadn't been out there yet. Jordan Spieth hadn't been out there yet to play. Jason Day has been out there, played it a few times. But, you know, it's a golf course you need to know. You need to know everything you can about it, as much knowledge as possible. You know, you cram for exams when you're in college. This is a place I'm not sure you can cram enough. I really don't believe it. Every golf hole is important. There's literally no golf hole you can sleep on. And it is a place that probably will have someone over par win it. And I think that's how it should be. I think under par at Oakmont would be a sin, especially after playing a golf course. Shout out to my man Steve Flesch. Got into San Antonio last week unexpectedly. Played well for a couple rounds, had a couple of shaky rounds, but, made the cut, made some money, flew immediately to Oakmont. I got to play with him. He was 2 under through 11 at Oakmont from the very, very backs. And, I mean, when I say backs, A couple of the tees, the U.S. Open players will be playing, or some 40, 50 yards back. You know, Oakmont's not a long golf course. It's some 7,200 yards. It's not like it's brutal. It's not 7,500. It's not 7,600 like some of the other venues we see in the U.S. Open. But it's just, it's so strategic that not only is preparing important, but I think having a caddy that knows exactly what's going on. My suggestion for any tour players out there that haven't got to Oakmont yet, take a couple of the Oakmont caddies out with you when you play. Don't take one. Take two, because I literally think there are so many small spots you could hit, or so many little places that you could play down, a different club selection. You know, there's five par fours that are under 400 yards. Very surprising when you think about what U.S. Opens are made of. So there, it's really, every hole makes you think about it almost like 18 different golf tournaments, really. I mean, you're literally playing it all completely different, and depending on where the holes and the tees are, it will be a brute. These guys are gonna have to play some amazing golf to not just be in contention, but to make the cut. I couldn't imagine what it's gonna look like here in 50-something days, because, I mean, it was tough enough when we played it. But like I said, we're gonna get us some questions, so let's do it. As I mentioned, hashtag ClubhouseSB if you have a question. Any question at all, send it our way. Sometimes they're on the pod, sometimes I throw them in the mailbag. I do on foxsports.com. But either way, most of the time I'll get to your questions. So we'll start with number eight. Number eight is a par three that gets a lot of attention during U.S. Open week, and apparently gets a lot of attention around U.S. Open week, and really of U.S. Open years. The eighth can play anywhere from 288 to 312 yards. But I want to make something clear. 312 yards seems insane for a par three. I understand that. It doesn't even make sense. Three, most of the time, 99.9% of the times, there should not be a three to start a par three yardage. And I agree with that. But I got a lot of questions about it. I got a question from Joe Shackman. He said, what did you hit on the 300-yard par three green in regulation? And no, I did not hit the green. I hit a two iron. The golf hole doesn't play the number it says. It is a golf hole that is a 245-yard carry to this area. It is really a hole designed for players to hit drivers and three woods. That was the idea Fones had when he made this golf hole. In 1973, it played 255 yards. That seems like a more reasonable par 3 distance, doesn't it? Oh, 255. We've seen that plenty of times in U.S. Opens. But what you have to understand is the golf hole, when it was designed for players to hit three woods and drivers. So when it was 230 yards or 255 yards, like when Miller won with the 73, you know, that was a driver or three wood back then. So think about technology. Technology is advancing, so they have to move that tee back because they've really done so much. And kudos and credit to the Oakmont staff, Bob Ford and everybody there, because what they've done is they've said, we want to make this golf course as much like it was originally when it was first designed, you know, the in Fone's mind, what it was supposed to look like and play like. We want it to be like that. And that's something I think is so cool. I was talking to a couple of the Oakmont staff. They said that the USGA came out when they were scouting the golf course. They came in and they said, it is insane. The fairway lengths, the fairway widths there, they said everyone is within a foot of what it was in 2007 for the U.S. Open. The golf course doesn't change. It's not different. I mean, you've heard so many stories about this golf course and the membership and how it's tougher in non-U.S. Open weeks than it is. And, you know, that's all good and well, and I understand that. But I just think the commitment and dedication to making this place championship style is one of the most impressive parts, and I really enjoyed it. So when people call out the 8th and they say, oh, it's ridiculous to see a 300-yard par 3, you have to understand that the golf hole was built for players to use certain clubs, and Oakmont, to its credit, has done a good job of keeping it that way. They've made it to where you're going to have to pull 3-wood, going to have to pull driver. Steve Flesch, I mentioned, was playing really well. Hit a little cut driver from the back tees to about 12 feet, and it landed short of the green and ran up there, and it was a perfect golf shot, and it was exactly what you'd want to do during the U.S. Open. So it's not impossible. I mean, he had a 12-footer for birdie. Now, Flesch didn't make it, but he had a really good shot. So I think that hole, again, a lot of holes are going to get attention, and I think that it's really interesting, and it's one of those things that you've got to make sure that you understand not only the history behind the golf course, but what they're trying to do these days to make it play like it initially played. Sean Rivers asked, did you hit any shots from the church pew bunkers? I played the first day, and I did not. Me and Joel Klatt, obviously the college football analyst and really, you know, one of the coolest guys that I've met in the business so far, Klatt is a golf nut. I mean, he admitted he's a freak. He was out there. We played 18 with everybody. There was seven of us. Paul Azinger was there. Joe Buck was there. A lot of us were playing the course. I mean, I'd never played it. A lot of them had played it before. Joel Klatt had never played it as well. We played 18. We're literally sitting in a meeting, and we're just sitting there going, we want to play it again. And that's what you think. I mean, you hear so many things about how hard it is and how brutal it is and how the membership wants you to be miserable when you walk off. It's not the case. It's such a well-designed golf course that you don't want to. I mean, you literally want to enjoy it. And so the question about the church pews, I didn't hit in the church pews the first day. I hit a little cut driver off the right side bunkers, ended up in the left side of the fairway. It was perfect. I ended up making a bogey because I hit a 9-iron like 40 yards left of the green. But I played it again. I played about six holes the next day, and I did hit it right in the middle of the church pew bunkers. And I actually had a good lie, and I probably should have hit it on the green because I had 130 yards, and I chunked it out. So that was about how my second day went. I'll just tell you, Klatt played really well the second day. Matt T. asked, how fast were the greens? I've heard 16 or 17 on the stemp. They were not 16 or 17 when we played it. The first day, I'd say they were probably running about a 12. And really, the second day, they got a little rain. Probably a little slower than that. You know, you really talk yourself into intimidation when you go to Oakmont. You think, oh my goodness, these greens are going to be so tough. The course is going to be so tough. And a couple of times you do have to remind yourself, you're still playing golf. You know, hit a couple of shots. Commit yourself to what you're doing. You know, don't let the golf course intimidate you. And I think that's important. So there were a few times where you'd have a 10-footer and you'd leave it a couple of feet short because you think it's going to be so quick. What I've heard, rumor is, the greens in 2007 were between a 14 and a 15 on the stem. So if that's the case, let me just say, for one of the few times in my life, I'm going to go, I'm glad I'm not a professional golfer, because that golf course with 14 or 15 on the stem is going to be brutal. Brett Sacco said, is length going to be the determining factor because everybody will miss the fairway? No, I do not think length is going to be much of an issue at all for these players. As I mentioned, five par fours under 400 yards for the U.S. Open. Obviously very surprising. There's some lengthy par fives, of course, but again, this is strategy. There's a chance that a long hitter, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, a player like that, will pull driver three or four times the entire round. I mean, you can hit driver on one, you don't have to. You hit iron on two, you can hit an iron on three, you can hit an iron on five, you know, you can hit an iron on six, or you can hit iron on four, you can hit iron on five, you have to hit driver on seven, you have to hit driver on nine, and you probably have to hit driver on 18, but a lot of those holes, driver's not the play. I mean, you want to keep it back of the trouble. That's the key. You want to keep it away as much as possible from those bunkers, because the idea with the bunkers at Oakmont is if you hit it in there, you should be penalized. And that's the bottom line. And so if you do that, you will be penalized. Trust me. There was a couple times where we had to pitch out. I'll actually tweet out a picture that Flesh took of me on the 15th on our Clubhouse Twitter account later today. And it'll literally show you that. Anything against those lips is a pitch out. And really, to hit a pitch out on some of those bunkers means you have to hit an amazing golf shot just to get it back in the fairway, just to advance the ball 20 yards. It really is crazy. We got a question from Aaron at ATF8912. He said, which golfer do you like the most at the U.S. Open after playing it? I've got a list here. My first name, this is going to be really surprising. I hope you're sitting down when I say this because it's probably going to knock you out of your chair. Jordan Spieth. He's a young player. He's got some potential. Might win a major or two. I think putting is so important at Oakmont that I think Spieth is the best clutch putter since Tiger. I really do. And so I'm going to go with Jordan Spieth. He's got to hit it a little straighter than he did at Augusta, that's for sure. I mean, if you miss these fairways, you're making bogeys. That's the bottom line. But I think if he gets it locked in off the tee, I would expect Jordan Spieth to have a really good week there. You know, there's no player in the world that's going to play Oakmont outside of Johnny Miller if the conditions are a little wet. And if they're dry and fast, you're going to have five or six holes every round at least where you have to make a five-footer outside for par. So if you have five, six holes and you're having to make five-footer, eight-footer, seven-footer, five-footer for par, you want the guy that feels like he can make those under all circumstances, under all pressure. So I think that Jordan Spieth is really picture perfect for Oakmont. I mean, it's crazy to say that, you know, the favorite at every major these days is who I think has got a really good chance. But I'm sorry, I can't go away from the chalk in that regard. I like Zach Johnson a little bit. Tied for 45th in 07 when it was here last time. Feels very Jim Furyk-like. Jim Furyk probably should have won that 07 U.S. Open. Made a couple of poor decisions on the second, the 17th, or yeah, on the second, 17th with his tee shots. Made two bogeys there, lost by one to Cabrera. So I like his chances there. Gets the ball in the fairway. Really good putter. Has to wedge it close. Only knock on Zach Johnson, and this is a really big surprise when I was researching it. Never had a top 10 at a U.S. Open. Not one. For a guy that hits it as straight as he does and is such a grinder and is so impressive around the greens, that might be one of the more surprising stats out there right now. And lastly, Kevin Kisner. He was at Oakmont last week, I heard. He is 8th on the PGA Tour in driving accuracy. He finished tied for 12th last year in his lone U.S. Open start. Kisner's a tough player. I don't think he gets enough credit for the way he plays and goes about it. Hits a lot of fairways. He's got a solid short game. I think Kevin Kisner could at least contend and get in the conversation. So those are three names that I'm looking at. Brennan Grace is somebody that I think is made for U.S. Opens. I mean, I just think that you're going to have to get out to Oakmont a couple of times and really strategize your way around it and the way you're going to play it. Because, you know, on the 15th, for instance, I don't think it's a driver hole. I think 15 is a 3-wood or a 2-iron somewhere left and give yourself a chance in. You're going to have, you know, some 215 yards or so to the green. But, again, you're trying to get the ball in play. There's so much trouble around that fairway that I think it's so important to hit it in the short stuff and give yourself a chance at par. I also think this is a place in a birdie-friendly PGA Tour that we live in these days where guys go out and shoot stupid low numbers on all these golf courses. I think this is a place where you pick your spots to make birdies and get aggressive, and I think those spots are about 4 or 5 holes, and that's it. I really do. I think outside of that, you're literally just playing for par and just trying to play smart. The key at Oakmont, and I really believe it, and I didn't do this. I made 2 double bogeys. The key there is you can't make doubles. You've got to make bogeys when you hit bad golf shots, and if you can do that, you're going to have a chance. Double bogeys are just going to doom your chances at this U.S. Open. I really believe it. Michael Steiner asked, what hole do you think will decide the championship? And I think this is, Mike Davis touched on this. I think it's the 17th. You know, it's a drivable par 4. There's a lot of ways to play it. Even from the very back tees, it's probably a driver 3-wood for these guys to get on the putting surface. You know, if you hit it right in the hole, it depends so much on where the hole location is. If the hole location is right, then it's probably it's potentially a layup. If the hole location's left, you can hit it in Big Mouth, which is the bunker to the right of the green. You can hit it in there, and you've got a chance to get it up and down. The green is this amazing plateau. Everything falls off the sides. I was talking to one of the Oakmont staffers, and they said that it's a hole that gets harder every time you play it, not easier. He was saying, every time I play it, I don't understand how I go about it. You know, it just gets tougher and tougher in the sense of, how in the world do I make a birdie on this hole? And I understand that. It really is. I hit it in the left bunker and luckily saved par. I hit a great 4-wood the second day, just short of the green, and was unable to get it up and down for birdie. And it's, again, it is the greens that do that for you, man. I mean, you've got to play so smart and so scared. Really, that's the thing, is golf is a fearful sport to begin with, but Oakmont, I just feel like you're scared for 5 hours. You're just so nervous to make one bad swing, one bad decision, and then go, oh my goodness, how am I going to make a par now? And that was a little bit of what we went about, but I love that. I really do. I love that it's so strategic and so smart and such an amazing compilation of 18 holes. I don't know if there's a better 18 holes in all of golf. Caroline Murphy asked, in all caps as well, what will happen to Phil? I think I read that in all caps. What will happen to Phil? Caroline, I got some bad news for you. I don't think this is a golf course that Phil Mickelson's ever going to win on. I just don't think it's his style. He likes being aggressive. You can't be aggressive at Oakmont. He finished tied for 47th in 94, missed the cut at the U.S. Open in 2007. One of these days, he's going to win a U.S. Open. I still believe that. I think that the list of golf courses that are going to be played coming up soon, I think, you know, at Wingfoot and Pebble and Torrey, as long as he stays healthy and interested and engaged in the game, he will have a chance at a U.S. Open trophy. I just don't think it's Oakmont. I really don't. I don't think this is a place that sets well for his eye, that fits what he wants to do. I know he's probably played, you know, dozens and dozens of rounds here outside of U.S. Open competition, but I don't think Phil's going to be on my list of 10 guys I like. I really don't. I think that, you know, when he has to lean on the putter these days, that's a bad sign because he gets so streaky with the flat stick And who knows what he's going to use? Is he going to do claw? Is he going to do reverse grip? Is he, who knows? I mean, it's just week to week for Phil Mickelson. I just think that this is a venue that Phil's going to struggle at. I really do. And if he made the cut, I would be very, very surprised. And I hate to say that. I mean, I would love for Phil. As an employee of Fox Sports, we will be broadcasting the U.S. Open. Phil Mickelson winning is about the best story out there. I'm not sure if this is the place that's going to happen. I think he's got a lot better chance in the next 3 years than he does this year at Oakmont. So those are the questions. As I mentioned, it is so spectacular. It really is. I mean, if you ever get a chance to play Oakmont and you turn it down, shame on you, because it is really a unique experience that's unlike, really, as I mentioned, anything I've ever seen. I almost want to say it's like playing in Scotland, but it's not totally like that. You know, it's got trouble like Scotland, but it's got features like American golf. And Phones was a visionary, you know, when he built this golf course. And I hate to be negative here, but I would have loved to see him build about 10 more golf courses around the nation, because he was brilliant. I mean, this is a brilliant design. This is a one-hit wonder, if you will. This is Chumbawamba and times 1,000. And, you know, I was just, I was so impressed. And I wasn't expecting a ton. So that was what was so cool. Many thanks, Bob, Ford, Devin, Charlie. Thank you guys for being so hospitable to us when we were out there. We had a lot of fun. I think the Fox team is really fired up for this. We really are. I mean, going back to a place that is this famous, that is this well-known, and it has this much history behind it is exciting for us in our second year. And I hope you guys are excited as well. Now we turn to Paige. We will be chatting Golf Digest cover, her golf game, and really what she's looking to do over the next few months, over the next few years, and really what her end goal is here as a pro golfer. So we'll come back real quick with Paige. And there we go. We welcome Paige Sporanek. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Nailed it. Into the clubhouse. If you don't know much about her, first of all, get out from under the golf rock. Obviously, had a cup of coffee at the University of Arizona, and then she went to San Diego State, 23 years old, wants to be a pro golfer in between working on her golf game. She's collaborated with the likes of Golf Digest and Callaway Golf, just to name a few. She's on the latest cover of Golf Digest, and as I ask everybody that comes on the podcast, so I have to ask you, what have you had to eat today so far?
I had fruit and yogurt this morning, and then I had a handful of almonds, and that's it.
It's 11:48 on the West Coast. That's not a lot of food. You need to get some something else in you. That's not going to do it. But I wanted to ask you, like, initially, you know, there's a lot of chatter about, you know, what you do and the things you do and the covers you're on and the game you play. But I just kind of wanted to dive into your leap into the golf landscape to start. You know, you posted your first Instagram picture back on March 10th, 2015. I looked back. It was you just swinging a golf club. You were still in college. This has blown up, you know, really in just about a year. When did it all start to take off for you, and how cool, strange, exciting has the last year been?
Yeah, it's been crazy. So I didn't really have any social media in college. About midway through my senior year, I kind of wanted to document kind of the cool things we were doing. And, you know, it's my last year, and we had, like, conference and a lot of big tournaments coming up, so I decided to get it back. And so I just kind of started posting some stuff, nothing really. And then about a couple months later, it was in June, I won the Colorado Match Play Tournament. And I remember this. I was just sitting having frozen yogurt with my mom. Like, so random. But anyways, all my friends kept, like, texting me, and they were like, hey, you're on Total Frat Move, and in the college scene, that's, like, the biggest website ever. Like, everyone knows about it. And so I was like, what's going on? Because I started getting, like, a ton of followers, and, like, I was freaking out. My mom was just enjoying her yogurt. She had no idea what was going on. And then so I go, and, like, this guy, Danry Jester, like, wrote this entire article about me. And I was like, okay, like, that's really weird. Kind of cool, but still a little weird. And the next morning, I wake up, and I have 50,000 followers and, like, interview requests. And so my first reaction was just to start crying and, you know, go in a little fetal position. Like, what's going on with my life? But it's been crazy. It's been really, really weird. Also super exciting. I kind of go through, like, mixed emotions with this entire thing, because financially, I wouldn't be able to be playing or trying to play professional golf right now without all of this help. So, like, I'm extremely blessed and fortunate to be in this position. But at the same time, people don't believe this, but I'm actually really shy and, like, super socially awkward and weird. And, well, they probably believe that part of it, but the first part, not so much. And so, like, it's hard to, like, put yourself out there and, like, have people, like, know you, I guess, like, and, like, want to know what you're doing and want to see everything that's going on, and your life is just kind of, like, out on social media, and, like, people are, like, requesting interviews, and I think that's so weird because it's just, like, me and, like, what I'm doing, and doesn't seem that exciting, but it's cool. It's definitely different, but I enjoy it because I think I know how lucky I am to be in this position, and so it's really good.
Yeah, and when all of it blew up, I mean, when you're saying you wake up in the morning, 50,000 people are following you, which is an insane amount. I mean, you know, I mean, I know your following now is closer to 1 million, which is even crazier to think. But you know, you have 50,000 people. I mean, did you think about deleting it all? Were you like, I'm just going to delete my Instagram? This is too weird.
I did. So, about kind of 2 weeks after the initial like 50,000, I was getting more and more, and it actually wasn't slowing down. And I got a call from someone, and they said that one of the guys who runs the tournament in Dubai wants to give me a sponsor's exemption into the event. And I immediately like freaked out, started crying again, and I was just like, I talked to my parents. I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Like, I'm going to go to the tournament. I'm going to suck, like, all this stuff. And I was, like, thinking all about it, even though it was in December. And I was like, I'm going to delete it. I'm going to delete everything. I don't want to do this. And they're like, okay, like, hold, like, slow down. Think about it, you know. And I decided, obviously, to keep it. And it's been good. But I definitely, like, I almost deleted it. I was so close.
Yeah, and you've brought up your parents a couple times already. How did you get into the game? I mean, when you were a kid, were your parents influential in getting you to play, or did you start from another kind of realm?
Yeah, so I was actually an elite gymnast before I switched over to golf. So I started gymnastics when I was really young, and then ended up having a couple really bad injuries, and I also had a bad birthday for the Olympics, which kind of weird, but so you peak when you're like 14, 15, 16 as a gymnast, that's like your golden years. And you have it.
That's crazy, by the way, to say. After 16, you're done. Just go do interviews, yeah. And you're done. So
you're just on the down. But they, you have to be 16 or turning 16 in the year of the Olympics to be able to compete as a gymnast. And my birthday is in March, so I would have missed it when I was, you know, in my prime. And so I would have been 18 at the first one I would have been eligible for, and it's too old, and I got injured a couple of times, so I decided to quit. And when I quit, kind of just sat down with my parents, because I loved being an athlete, and I kind of identified myself as an athlete because gymnastics was kind of all I did, and I got to such a high level, so it was weird to just quit and then kind of feel, you know, normal again, because I had to start like homeschooling when I was in, you know, doing all of that. So I didn't really have like a normal, I guess, upbringing or like a childhood. I didn't even like go to normal school. And so we were like, hey, what sports would I be good at? Or what would I like to do just to kind of keep me busy? And tried tennis first. I didn't really want to run that much anymore. I was kind of over it.
Because running's the worst. So I mean, we're going to agree that running is the worst. So I agree with that.
Exactly. So my dad was like, you should try golf. Cause I like to just kind of be on my own sometimes, and you know, that's kind of good for golf. And so, I tried it, loved it, and now I'm here still doing it.
So, I mean, do your parents play? I mean, are they golfers at all?
They're recreational golfers. I mean, they'll do it kind of for fun once in a while, but no, I didn't really come from like a golfing family.
Right.
No one really plays anymore in my family. My dad played a little bit, but it's definitely not been, I've been the only one to play pretty much.
Yeah. And so you go to Tucson for college. So first of all, I mean, what point are you hitting the ball well enough to where you go, I've got a chance to play collegiate golf?
I broke par within a year of playing.
Wow.
So I think because of my background in gymnastics, I had, you know, the discipline and the work ethic to, you know, be out there all the time and practicing, and also kind of like body awareness and the strength. So golf was a little bit, I want to say it was easier because golf just kind of sucks that way and it's really hard.
Right.
But it did come, I guess, a little easier than for other people. So I picked it up pretty fast. And so I guess by the time I was like 14, 15 was when I kind of realized that, like, I'm not totally terrible at it. So I wanted to get a college scholarship, just so obviously my parents didn't have to pay for school, and financially always things have always been a little bit tight for us. So I definitely wanted to keep working hard on that just so I could, you know, help them out too.
Yeah. And so, you know, go to college, as I mentioned, you go to Tucson, then you go to San Diego, by the way, kudos to you. You picked two of the best destinations in America to go to school, but you know, you graduated last May, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You graduated last May. And so, and as you mentioned, all of a sudden you're in this bubble of popularity, this crazy bubble. As you mentioned, people reaching out, they're trying to get interview requests. You're just getting into the world, really, if you think about it. Did all that noise help you initially, or did it hurt you? I mean, was it confusing, or did it just kind of help you realize what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I think it was definitely confusing and pretty hard. I love golf more than anything, and it's my life, it's my passion. It's, you know, I wake up every day and I'm so excited to go out and play golf, and I know I want to play professionally. It's always been a dream of mine, and so it's hard to also wake up and then see comments from people that don't know you or don't know your story, and, you know, they're like, oh, you suck, or just give it up, or are you a 10 handicap? Can you really break 80? And, you know, it's discouraging sometimes to always see that and to get the, obviously, I have, like, a million amazing comments and so much, you know, support from everyone, but it's always, you know, the 1%. And it's those negative comments that really seem to stick with you, because kind of brings out that self-doubt you have in yourself. And, you know, I'm 23. I'm still trying to figure life out. You know, I still have my insecurities, and I think getting the negative comments kind of pulls at that. And so it's hard. It's hard to wake up and to see that and to still keep going every single day. But if I didn't love golf so much, I think I probably would have quit by now.
But yeah. And you need to stop reading your comments. Day. You need to stop reading these comments. I've told you this like 3 times. You need to put tape over the bottom part of your phone or just not look at it. You've got too many people out there. That's what's so crazy is there's so much hate. And there was this amazing thing. I'm not even sure what company did it, but they basically had men read hateful comments to some sports writers out there, some female sports writers. And it was a really good representation of like how terrible these people are. And of course, I mean, there's terrible people in all genders and everything, but you know, the stuff that they say that's just so unknowledgeable in it. And I mean, I've played golf with you. You're a very good golfer. I mean, you can shoot under par, you can shoot par. I mean, you could shoot 75, but I mean, so could Tiger and so can Jordan Spieth. I mean, that's part of the game. You know, and that kind of brings me to, and you've mentioned it already, you get the sponsor's invite to the Dubai Masters. Kind of, first of all, you know, you accept the invite as any up-and-coming professional golfer would do. You play in anything you can anytime they ask you. And I wrote about this on FoxSports.com to end the year. But, you know, you get into the event, you go somewhere you've never been. Just kind of walk me through that week emotionally. And, I mean, I can only imagine how emotional it was. But, you know, you're going to try to play golf. It's your first professional event of any regard, and the noise is so loud around you that, I mean, it must have been almost impossible to even hit a golf ball.
Yeah, so like I said, I got the invite back in July, and the event was in December. So when I committed to it, I honestly didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. You know, I've heard of a lot of my friends who have gotten invites in the tournament, and it's just, you go and you play the tournament and that's it. And it's just to get experience, to be out there. And that was it. So December comes around. I've never been out of the States before. So it's my first time flying to Dubai, you know, 15 hours.
short flight for your first experience outside of the U.S.
Yeah. So it was easy. No, but so I get there and, you know, it's great, but I also just feel a little out of place. You know, it's my first tournament. All these girls know each other, and they've also heard about me and kind of me coming in and my story and stuff. And, you know, I think they had some kind of preconceived ideas about who I was or how I got in. And so it was rough. No one was very opening at first. There was a lot of media attention on me that I've never experienced before. It was the first time I've done a press conference. It was the first time, you know, I had to do all those interviews. And then that day, a lot of negative press started coming out and, you know, headlines everywhere of like, oh, she doesn't deserve it. She doesn't deserve to be in here. It's just because of social media. Like, she took a more deserving player spot. And so before the first round, I actually locked myself in the bathroom. True story. You can ask my sister who was there with me. She was banging on the door. And I was crying. I was bawling hysterically. I was so scared to play because I knew whatever I shot, one, it wasn't going to be good enough. And two, if I really did play like crap, you know, it was going to be everywhere. And everyone was going to know that I shot, you know, whatever score. And that was super scary for me because golf's hard enough. And then to have to do it in front of everyone and know that they're going to comment good or bad on your performance before you even play, it's hard. It's really scary. And, I mean, I learned a lot about myself and kind of how to handle things. And I definitely didn't handle things correctly with, you know, I didn't turn my phone off. So I was actually feeding into everything and reading right. All of the comments, which I definitely should not have done. And then after the second round, I ended up shooting 77-79. I was so nervous the entire time that I was shaking. Like, every part of my body was shaking. I was so nervous. And, you know, every time you go to a new hole, there was, you know, people watching you and cameras around and, you know, people videotape. And it was just something I've never experienced before. I've never played in front of crowds before. I've never, you know, been on that stage. And I was like a deer in headlights the entire time. And, It was difficult, but looking back on it, it was definitely one of the best things that could have happened to me as a person and also for my golf career, because it's made me a lot stronger. And like I said, if I didn't love golf, I would have quit by now, because that was tough. And it was hard, again, to read all of the negative comments about myself. And I had a ton of support too, which was awesome. A lot of, you know, LPGA players reached out to me, and a lot of PGA Tour players. I mean, a ton of awesome people were just like, you're okay, like, keep it going, like, we didn't break 80 in our first event either. And so it was really nice to hear that and to have support from people who matter, you know.
Right,
and
right.
I think I kind of look at all the negative comments from people that, you know, they don't know me, they don't know my story, they don't know anything, and they don't really matter in what I'm doing, but I still look at those. So to actually get positive comments from people who are, you know, very influential and mean something to me as, you know, growing up and people I look up to, it meant a lot to me, and it was good. But
yeah.
My gosh, after the second round, I was literally on the floor crying. I stole cake, so they have like this huge buffet. I stole like all these desserts, and I was like crying eating cake. So it was interesting.
But you didn't post that picture on Instagram. It's bawling your makeup's everywhere and you're eating cake. Probably would have been one of the more popular posts, but I mean, you said it was one of the biggest, the most important things. So, I mean, you didn't regret going. Did you regret it right after? I mean, did you regret and say, I kind of wish I wouldn't have come? Or did you right away know, in the long run, this will be a good thing for me?
I don't want to say I regretted it, because I think my mind was it was so scattered the entire time that I couldn't even, like, put together like good thoughts of what right. I was doing, because I was just like, oh my gosh, cake, people, golf, you know, I just was not focused on anything. But I don't regret it at all. It was tough. It was really, really hard, but you have to be put through those situations to see how strong you really are. And I came out a lot better, and I think I'm a better person for it, which is, you know, the most important thing, because when golf is there, you know, it comes and goes, and I'm not gonna be a golfer the rest of my life, but it's made me a better person, and I can carry that throughout my entire life. So it was definitely a really important experience for myself.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you look at some big names, and I mean, and I've mentioned this before, but you know, like Justin Rose, I mean, as a major winner, I think he missed his first 28 cuts when he turned pro. You know, I mean, golf can be really hard in the transition. So, you know, and it's something I wrote after your round, after your experience in Dubai was, you know, 77, 79 is pretty darn respectable considering as everything you've already told. I mean, you could have shot 90, 90, you know, I mean, easily. I mean, with as much was happening around you, I mean, it could have been completely easy to completely fall apart. So, I mean, it's not, to me, it's not bad rounds of golf, I think, considering everything that was going on. But what do you say when people think all you do is just lay around and take pictures? You practice, like, what's a day for you? What's a typical day when you're home, you know, for you, for kind of start to finish with your golf?
Yeah. Well, I usually wake up, I'll put my makeup on, I'll take about 5 million selfies, and I go to bed.
There you go. That's Paige, everybody. Yeah. That's her day.
That's my day. No, I'll wake up, I try to get my workout in early, so I'll either do cardio or I'll go lift, or I mix it up a lot, but usually I wake up, I'll do cardio, I'll go to the golf course and I'll do short game, range, and then I'll usually play 9 or 18, kind of depending on the day, and then I will go home and usually I'll do a yoga class at night or I'll work out again. So it's all golf. And yeah, it's pretty funny because I'll post a picture and people are like, why aren't you practicing? And I'm reading the comment while I'm practicing. You know, I think social media kind of gives I don't post every part of my life. I'm not like, hey guys, I'm at the range again,
right.
You know, or I'm working out. Like, I don't have my phone with me when I'm working out or when I'm practicing because I'm too busy working out and practicing
right.
to take pictures. And, you know, I don't have a personal photographer with me at all times to take my picture or to do this or do that. So, I mean, it's funny, but that's just, you know, again, those comments that you can't control other people saying, but it's hilarious just to see what they say, or like, you need to practice some more. And I'm like, I'm allowed to post a picture too, right? Like,
yeah,
I just always practice.
I mean, I would put a lot of money on the fact that some guys like Ricky and Justin Thomas and stuff do plenty more social than you do on a daily basis. Yet nobody's yelling about their golf games. Have other tournaments reached out to you about exemptions or playing in events either that have already passed or that are upcoming?
Yeah. I've had invites, but I'm not ready to play them yet. And I want to make sure next time I accept something that I'm mentally prepared. And I don't even know if I will accept them, because I want to earn my way on and I want to show everyone that, you know, I'm not just doing this to get attention or, you know, golf's my life and I want to earn my way. I want to play professional golf. It's always been a dream of mine. And I want to do that. And I want to get the respect that I feel like I deserve. And I think that's the best way to do it and to show people that I'm serious about this.
Right, and as I mentioned, I've played golf with you, and you know, you've got a lot of game. I mean, you hit the ball plenty far enough. I've seen you make some clutch putts to win money off me at times. What's a part of your game that you feel like you need to strengthen or get better so that you can get there and not only compete but stay, you know, not only on the LPGA Tour but stay as a player that has a chance to win events?
I lack confidence. I feel like the thing that's really hurting me right now is I don't believe in myself enough to be out there. And I feel like once I feel like I deserve to be there and I know I can be there, then I'll be playing a lot better. But it's just that lack of confidence. And we all know how hard golf is mentally. And so if you don't believe in yourself, then who is? You're not going to get there.
Have you read like Bob Rotello books or like talk to like Vision 54? Have you gone to any of those mental places to try to work on kind of yourself when you're in the moment mentally so that you do believe like, hey, I've got an 8-iron from 145. I've hit the shot a million times. I know I can hit it close.
Yeah, and I have. But the thing I've started to notice that it's not really golf-related problems that I have mentally. It's kind of the outside noise that gets to me and kills my confidence. So it's hard to like kind of figure out what the real problem is and why it's affecting me. And I think it's, again, just having, because I'm a people pleaser,
yeah.
And I like for people to like me, and I feel good about myself when I make other people happy, and so it's hard. so like I said, they have all those negative comments. So I think once I can get over that, then that's when I'll be confident in myself and not feeling like I have to. The only way I feel good about myself is by if someone else likes me, you know, and I need to get old. And I think once I get older and more mature and, you know, kind of figure things out, then I'll be getting better with that. But it's a process and it's hard.
Absolutely. Okay. So, you're on the cover of Golf Digest, and again, the noise comes back. People are like, why are you on the cover of Golf Digest? And what's funny is the Golf Digest cover is not about your golf game. It's more about the future of golf. And so you're asked to do this. You work with Golf Digest. Were you surprised again that people made a big uproar about it?
I knew I was going to get some criticism just because it was the cover, but I think the problem was they saw future and then they saw me. And so they think that Golf Digest said, I'm the future of golf. And that was never said. That was never the point of it. I was a model to kind of represent the innovators and kind of the futurists of golf and how everything's progressing. And again, the article inside was never about anyone on the tour. It was about people who are trying to progress the game.
Right.
And it was about like these guys who want trees to light up and mental things and, you know, the little boy. And so it was totally different than what everyone thought. So I was surprised. And hopefully when people open it up and actually see what's inside, they'll kind of understand that, you know, a lot of people were saying that Lydia deserves the cover. And I think Lydia is the most amazing golfer ever, and she's someone I look up to, and obviously I want to aspire to be, but she wouldn't have been kind of the right fit for that because she is the future of golf. She's present, she's now, she's everything, and she deserves her own feature, her own cover, her own everything. That feature and the cover wasn't about me.
Right.
And I don't think people realize that, you know, and she deserves her cover, but doesn't mean that only one female can get a cover.
Right.
You know, it means that I can get one, she can get one, Stacey Lewis can get one, Paula Creamer can get one. Like, we're allowed to have covers. We're allowed to be featured. We're allowed to be out there. And, you know, I got a lot of also comments about being, you know, over-sexualized. And I understand that the outfit was tight, but I was covered up. If you look in if you look at the pictures inside, I'm wearing a turtleneck in one of them. I'm covered up. It's done. It was done artistically. It wasn't done to shock or to create controversy. It was just, you know, Golf Digest doing something cool, doing
right.
something different, being, you know, kind of more Vogue and trying to just, you know, do something cool. And I thought it was done well and it was artistic and I'm proud of it. And I'm proud of the cover and it was such an honor, and I still can't believe that I'm on it. You know, I'll be
right.
walking by and I'll see it. It's crazy, and it's something I'm able to carry with me for the rest of my life, but it's hard when some people try to take that away from you.
You're asking people to actually open up a magazine and read things and, like, research it. This is not the world we live in. The world we live in is to see something and then comment and then maybe do a little research. That seems to be what 2016 is all about. Are you amazed at the way men act on the internet to you? Like, does it still amaze you?
Yeah, it's just people in general. I got a comment just recently of some girl I played junior golf with, and she made a very, it was pretty rude and it was hurtful. And I was like, we played golf together. We were cool.
Right.
Like, what happened? And it's just, I can't imagine ever going on someone's page that I don't know and writing a hurtful comment. And lately I try not to comment to people on my main page, but I will message them privately and I will say, you know, thank you if they wrote something nice, and then I'll kind of explain myself if it was something hurtful. And it's been a good way for me to kind of reach out to the people who follow me and, you know, kind of talk to people and kind of show people who I am as a person. And every time I've reached out to someone, it's been a positive conversation, and, you know, they realize that, you know, what they say does hurt, and I think people need to realize that.
Yeah, kill them with kindness.
You know, what you
I mean, that's
say
what you
hurts
do.
People's feelings.
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, you know, I mean, not as much as you, just because I mean, my popularity is not what yours is, of course. But you know, when I mean, I get people that, you know, they write me mean stuff on Twitter, or you're an idiot, you know, you don't know what you're talking about and all this stuff. And literally any time you respond, and I would say it's 99.9 of the time, you respond with something funny, kind, you know, just almost, you know, making fun of yourself or calling yourself out. They immediately switch, and it's crazy, but they immediately flip and go, oh, you know, I was just kidding, or, oh, you know, I thought it was great. You know, I just, you know, I don't know if I agree with this part. And it's just funny because it's like, the internet tough guy, the moment you say back to him, respond to him, they almost flip, complete switch. And I've always found that just so insane that, you know, when you get behind that computer, you can be so mean, but the second somebody comes back at you, then you know, you go back in your little rabbit hole. But I wanted to ask you, you've met a lot of celebrities, you've met a lot of people. What's been your coolest interaction with somebody, you know, in the last year?
Wow. I met LeBron, which was awesome. It was for a second, but it was LeBron James. So that he literally was like, hi, shook my hand and left to go to the game. But his hands were like massive. They're the size of like my body. But that was just really cool. I've met a lot of, so Christina Kim on the LPGA, she reached out to me and she was so cool and gave me so much awesome advice. And Natalie Golbus as well. And I kind of appreciate that more because it's people who I look up to and who are kind of got me into the game of golf. And so to see them take time out of their day to talk to me, that just is incredible to me. It's like these people are so amazing. Like they're such incredible athletes. And the fact that they take time just to talk to little old me, like that just is so cool to me. And it means so much, and I think those experiences mean more than just, you know, meeting some celebrity who, you know, it's cool when they actually take the time to, like, interact with you and talk to you and help you out, you know, and kind of guide you and become, like, role models, and now they're someone I look up to even more, and right. I can talk to it. It's incredible.
Yeah, Christina is one of my favorite people in all of golf, and it's, you know, she's one of those people too that will take some time out of her day to like help, you know, maybe the person that's struggling a bit. And it's obviously a very good show of character for her because, I mean, she's funny and goofy and can be crazy, you know, like in all regards, but she's one of the most genuine people that I've ever met. So that's really cool. She did that. Who do you look up to? You know, do you look up to your parents? Do you look up to pro golfers? Do you look up to other athletes?
My parents are number one in my life, and I look up to them so much. I mean, they've sacrificed everything to kind of get me where I am, and also my sister as well. And I work so hard every single day so I can make them proud, because, like I said, they have sacrificed their lives to give us everything we need, and that's incredible, and they are so amazing, and I wish everyone had parents as fantastic as me. But also, like, the golfers who've reached out to me, they're someone I kind of look up to, and I want to be like them because they're my role model. And if I never turn pro, or if I never, you know, make it, if someone reaches out to me and I can inspire them to play golf or to have fun with golf, then that means more than anything else. And if that's my legacy, then I'm okay with that. And they've done that for me, and I think that's so awesome.
Yeah, okay, so quickly we'll do some rapid-fire questions, then I'll let you go. I know you're a busy, busy person. This is you speaking, by the way, not me, because nobody cares about what my social platform looks like. I would delete every social platform I have for ...
Oh my gosh, this isn't rapid-fire if I can't think of anything.
You gotta go more rapid than that.
I have a new puppy.
A new puppy?! You can just go get a puppy. What are you going to put? You have comic book obsession and you have a ball pit in your apartment. That puppy would be in hog heaven there. That's for sure. Your favorite golfer to watch is?
Tiger Woods.
Hitting range balls or working on your short game?
Short game.
If you had a cheat day, you would eat what?
Oh my gosh, a donut with ice cream and then a burger on the side. with between pizza and then mac and cheese on top.
So, I mean, so all of it. That's literally all of the cheap things. The only thing you left off was a burrito. Your flop shot game scale from 1 to 10, in your opinion?
I'll have you answer that one.
I mean, like an 8.5 or 9. It's really good.
You saw that flop shot I hit.
It's like a 9, maybe a 10. It's really good. I don't understand. It makes me feel so insufficient. I cannot even come close to hitting these full towering flop shots you hit. How many rounds of golf do you play a week on average?
At least 7.
And will you try to play more mini tour golf tournaments in the coming months?
Yeah, that's all I'm doing next month.
Next month you're playing in them. Do you already signed up and everything?
Yeah, I'm good to go.
Okay. And you have anything coming up as well that you'd like to plug or anything? You know, you've got some videos or anything coming out?
No, nothing new's coming out. Just go look at Golf Digest and actually read it. I think you'll enjoy it.
Go get a Golf Digest and actually open the magazine and read the part, not only about Paige, but about the future of the game. That's what we're all trying to do. Paige, I appreciate you coming on. Good luck with everything, and good luck next month with the tournaments. I hope you play well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that'll do it for this week on The Clubhouse. Make sure you check out some of the stuff we're putting up on foxsports.com. Some exciting stuff coming up in the next few days. I will be at the Wells Fargo covering the event early in the week for PGA Tour Live, so make sure you check that out, and we'll be back next week with another episode. Thanks to everyone at Oakmont for hosting us and having us just such a great week. It was so much fun there. And also to Paige for being such an awesome guest. Make sure you give her a follow if you don't already. And I'm sure if you're listening to this and you like golf, you probably already are. So have a great week. Go hit some range balls. Improve that game.